This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The AT&T Discovery District in downtown Dallas is one of the more ambitious experiential digital projects out there, in the U.S. or globally, with the big reason being the focus from the inception on coming up with something that was more than just a technology circus coming to town. Telecom's giant AT&T engaged the huge global design firm Gensler to come up with a cohesive, visually exciting design concept for not only its headquarters building in Dallas, but for the area surrounding it, delivering a destination and a talking point. There's a massive LED media wall on the corner of one building, what Gensler calls digital trellises on the urban office campus plaza, and more LED on the walls, support columns, and even the ceiling of the head office lobby. That's coupled with synchronized lighting and something that sounds a bit like a show control system. It's super impressive and it costs more than a couple of bucks to build and to sustain. The first wave of creative includes digital art from some of the top people in the field, from Rafik Anadol to Moment Factory. I had a chance to speak with two of the key people behind the project, Justin Rankin, director of Gensler's Digital Experience Design Studio, and Dana Hamdan, who served as design manager for the project. Hi, thanks for joining me, both of you. The first thing I'd like to do is get a description from you of what the AT&T Discovery District is all about and how Gensler was involved.
So AT&T Discovery District is actually AT&T's headquarters in Dallas, which happens to be in an urban setting. Not a lot of corporations are headquartered in business districts. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because it is in a business district, it makes it accessible to the public. And so to say it in a high level and in a summed up way, it is a headquarter that's open to the public and that's been very successful based on the experiences that we've seen in the past couple months.
And this district, so to speak, has been open for what, a year, year and a half, something like that?
Yeah, really, we had substantial completion on the project really in September of last year. And, due to various circumstances, obviously, it's been a fairly organic process in terms mm-hmm. of really opening the district and starting to really activate the space. So really what we've seen is over the last 2 or 3 months, it's really, really come to life in full swing. And AT&T has started to really, use the space, activate it, promote events, host events and pop-ups and things like that. So it's been really exciting to see it finally, start to take its stride right. over these past couple months.
So if I'm in Fort Worth, I get in my car and I drive into downtown Dallas, find parking somehow, and wander over there, what am I going to see?
You mentioned parking. One of the things that actually make it successful is, and that builds kind of on the duality of the program being a employee, a headquarter, and open to the public, there is actually parking for the Discovery District. So you'll not have any issues finding parking in that spot. But basically, the approach to the district is very, very interesting, and that's kind of takes from its name, Discovery District. There are some macro scale indicators for the space. So driving from probably 5 city blocks away, you will see a mega screen that is on a natural terminus to one main street. It's called Eckert Street in downtown. And mm-hmm. then as you approach the district, the screen will kind of fade away. And from your human scale perspective, a grove of trees will appear, and then in that grove of trees is camouflaged a nice interactive sculpture that we call the globe. And but you'll basically see a lot of immersive lighting that will draw you towards the plaza. So that's just kind of from an approach standpoint of the district.
So this is a lot of big LED display, but it's also interactive sculptures, it's audio, it's synchronized lighting, all kinds of things. So it's not just like a big display and look at the cool stuff we have on this big display.
Absolutely. So what we did, and basically to give the space a headquarter presence, because before it was just disparate buildings, a number of buildings around a plaza that was not really used. It was very underused, and after hours it just gets dark and nobody's there, probably doesn't feel safe. And so what we did is we kind of knit together a block in the city. We introduced two mega trellises that have media integrated to them to just give a very clear realm, recognizable realm for the plaza, and you kind of get a sense that, oh, I'm in one place. So even though the buildings are not all the same architecture, we tied them with a similar visual, like a consistent, cohesive design with these two mega trellises. And then, yes, everything is integrated, and that kind of is the spirit of the project. And we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go through this.
And with this being AT&T's global headquarters, the kind of anchor of the district is the Whitaker Tower, which is a 36-story tall building that kind of sits on the plaza. So you've got that really as a big landmark. The lobby of that, which we can talk more about, is a really impressive, fully immersive experience. So there's this really nice, and then, off of Whitaker Tower onto Commerce Street, there's kind of an entry portal there. That we call the VIP entry. So you have this really nice flow of, entering off of Commerce Street, coming through that VIP portal into the lobby, fully immersive experience. And then from the lobby, through these really impressive glass windows, you're able to look out onto the plaza. So from the lobby, you can see the globe and you can see, the big lawn area that's in the plaza. You can see the trellises lit up. You can see all the food and beverage outlets and all of the people and the energy. And so you kind of naturally find your way exploring out into the plaza. And then once you're out there, you've got the globe and the media wall and the lawn and the restaurants and bars and, really becomes a total experience at the end of the day.
What was the brief from AT&T? What did they say they wanted?
So this is interesting because I think the nice part about this project is collaborating with AT&T on really, really formulating what the vision for this project is. And so this kind of morphed over the years, but at the at the beginning, the most important thing it was to kind of give the employees a campus that they're proud of, try to reposition the brand of AT&T, especially with all the focus on media. And then third, but probably the most important, is give back to the city because they are in an urban, business district setting as well. These were the main asks from the client, which we were very happy to sit in visioning sessions and come up with the concepts, and we're very, very happy with the end result.
Yeah, and I would layer maybe on top of that at a certain point in time, this was, several years ago, there were discussions within AT&T on whether or not to keep their HQ in Dallas or potentially move and relocate their HQ to San Antonio or another city. So, the decision was made to stay in Dallas. And then on top of that, coincidentally during that same time period is when AT&T and Time Warner merged. And so really overnight, AT&T with that merger, becoming official, became the largest media company in the world. Taking on WarnerMedia, HBO, all of their, sub brands. And so really that became a big part of the brief was we're the largest media company in the world. We want to give back to our employees. We want to give back to the city of Dallas. How do we create a destination, for all of the above, that really is able to solve, for all of those different goals. And that was really a thread throughout the entire strategy. The design of the immersive experiences, the content, the way that everything is orchestrated was really to put AT&T in that light and help them reposition their brand, quite honestly.
It's not easy when you're in downtown. It's not easy to have a prominent presence. Like, it's not like you have a campus. Oh, it's known. This is the so-and-so campus. This is the Apple campus in Apple Park or Menlo Park. Or it's hard, and it kind of gets lost in the urban fabric. And so this was very important for AT&T to be able to give their campus a presence, and for their employees to feel proud about where they work. And so it was just a nice vision, a nice commitment from the client. And again, I think we were very happy with the end product, and how we'll talk a little bit more about how we came to make that happen.
One of the things that makes this so unique is that the campus is completely open in public, right? So when you look at other Fortune 5, Fortune 10 companies, and you look at their global HQs, they're locked down. They're Fort Knox, right? So you don't have public that can just walk up and come hang out. Here, it's the total opposite. So AT&T has really welcomed the city and the community into their space and into these immersive experiences, which is really unique and has been really exciting from Gensler's perspective to partner with AT&T on that and bring that vision to life.
Right. It was not easy. You know, when we do projects like that, we usually want to look at precedents. And for this one, there's really not a lot of precedents that you can look at. In fact, in North America, we couldn't find a prominent campus setting that is open to the public in an urban setting. I mean, we've been to the major campuses. We visited, you know, Amazon and Salesforce have some similarities, but not quite fully open, like Justin was saying. And the rest are kind of remote, and they have their own campuses that have limited accessibility to. So,
Yeah, I think about districts that are in the central parts of the city, and they tend to be entertainment districts that are built around, you know, sports arenas or ballparks or things like that. And it's a lot of restaurants and bars and things. But I can't, as you say, think of many instances where there's a campus built around, or a district built around an office campus.
Yeah, but that became a very, you know, from our standpoint, we think this is going to be a trendsetter campus for corporations to anchor downtowns and anchor such settings. And it really plays the duality of program. You've got your employees, your drawdown employees during the day, not just your employees, but employees of the central district with the amenities that now are offered. And then gradually towards the end of the day, you see a very seamless transition, and you see employees on their way out. They may grab a drink or go to a happy hour, but you kind of see that transition of user type from your employee to people who actually live in downtown and now are utilizing the space as a normal extension, like a third place, what we call a third place, which is, you know, people that live in downtown don't have a lot of space in their units. So it's good to have this presence of a public space that has all the technology offering of Wi-Fi and is quite enjoyable, actually. So it's a really nice 24/7 activation of the space.
Did the pandemic and the experience of offices locking down and everything else, and this whole idea that, okay, office towers are going to be hollowed out, people are just going to be remote working, there's no need for these big edifices anymore. Did any of that reshape the thinking?
Actually, if I may say it, actually reinforced the thinking, because eventually people are, you know, this conversation is not necessarily about the hybrid mode of work or office, or, but what we found out is that it actually provided what the pandemic is telling people you need. It provided quite a few different modes of collaboration outdoor that you can sit and collaborate in. And we've seen that, you know, people, like Justin was saying, the space organically opened. It was not, there was not a big major
ribbon cutting
event that happened, but people needed a space where they can be outdoors safely, in, you know, whether working or just enjoying other people's company. And we've seen, you know, articles in major publications like Fast Company and others really dwell on and emphasize the need for outdoor collaboration spaces. And we feel that this came just right in time for the AT&T employees, actually.
So let's talk about what was done and why it was done. When you had the brief, when you kind of worked out, okay, here's the big idea, then how did the components come together? Why did you decide on a big LED on corner wrapped LED on the side of one of the buildings, and you know, displays that line the interior of the, I think you said, the Whitaker building and so on.
Mm-hmm. So there was early on, I would say, as we approach really all of our projects, you know, there was a lot of strategy put into early on planning and thinking, and our teams, you know, working together and working with AT&T and other stakeholders to think through, you know, different use cases, modes, activation scenarios, et cetera, the flow of traffic, viewports, viewing angles, et cetera. We did a lot of, you know, research. We interviewed and spoke with employees. We interviewed and spoke with C-level executives and VIPs, and, you know, collected all of that thinking to really inform where to invest the energy in concepting, and, you know, through that concepting to help think about what types of platforms make the most sense. And so we can get into it in more detail, but when you start to kind of break apart the different digital platforms, whether it's the Media Wall or the Globe or the Trellises or the Lobby, what you'll find interesting is that there's a lot of intent put behind the design of those platforms so that those platforms can be leveraged for multiple different scenarios. A prime example of that is that the Globe sculpture actually sits on a hydraulic turntable that can rotate 180 degrees. So we have these moments in which we can activate this small, intimate Grove setting. So maybe it's a singer-songwriter, or it's a DJ, or it's someone, you know, reading. You can have a small kind of intimate moment. At the same time, you can rotate the Globe, you know, pivot it towards Commerce Street, which is the main thoroughfare through downtown Dallas. And now you've got a beautiful and interactive backdrop for a marathon or for a holiday parade or for something else. So for every platform, we've thought through those different scenarios. Those were all part of that mm-hmm. original strategy and helped us to shape, you know, where they should be located, how they should be faced. Mm-hmm. You know, the Media Wall specifically, we thought about, you know, as Dana mentioned at the beginning of the call, there's this kind of viewport that you have from five or more blocks away, and it perfectly frames the shape and the aspect ratio of the Media Wall. So that was very intentional. But we decided to wrap the corner because now we have this ability to draw people in from, you know, the other side of the block or the other side of the plaza. We can also provide some really cool content and experiences to people that are sitting at the at Jackson, which is a kind of a casual beer garden. So I would say, and Dana, feel free to add on to that, but yeah, you know, those were all, you know, factors and considerations that led to the final design.
For sure. And I would say, if you're asking us as to why we did what we did, why did we decide that we needed a orchestra or orchestrated platforms? Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, when we were thinking about that, AT&T was really also, I mean, obviously, making employees proud, but second, they really wanted a shift on their brand. How do they represent their brand? And AT&T is not in the business of selling physical products, right? They sell an intangible service. It does, and I say that all the time. It doesn't matter if you have an iPhone or a Samsung or an LG or whatever it is. It's actually the service that comes through that makes mm-hmm. you enjoy your experience. And so we kind of came with this concept that we have this intangible layer connecting slick and new and futuristic looking platforms that make them come to life and make them feel connected. And that's why we have very purposely positioned, like Justin spoke about the purposeful positioning of the screen. And then what we wanted to do is tie all that through a invisible that you cannot see, right? A content management system that makes these communicate together. It was very important for us that when you step in the district, you feel that you're in a realm. You feel that you feel the power of connection. You mm-hmm. can see a consistent, for example, media message. You can see something on the media screen, and then all of a sudden it loops and it's in ground lights under your feet, and then it loops and it's now above your head in the grounds, in the lights that are in the trellises, or then it moves and activate the Globe. So you kind of see that communication, you see that power of connection between these platforms, and it's all powered kind of by AT&T. So that was kind of a play on the brand representation for the client, and it only made sense right there in that district.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It manifests, you know, the whole notion of connection, which is that deep kind of core element of AT&T's brand, manifests in two ways. It manifests quite literally in a physical way as we connect the platforms and connect the spaces, but it also manifests through people. You know, the Globe Sculpture prime example, it's an opportunity where we can bring people together into a space, and I will say a safe space, where they can be distanced, but have a really unique experience and discover an experience that's maybe not inherent or visible as you're walking by. So you see the sculpture, you see that there's something going on, you maybe hear something, you walk over, and you've got people in as you're in the space, you're now controlling the experience together that you're having. So right. There's definitely multiple elements of that as you navigate through the district, whether it's the Globe or whether it's in the lobby or other areas in the lawn.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Is the project driven by the art, or is there also a nod or thinking around the commercial side of this? Because what I've seen are, you know, great pieces of content from companies like Moment Factory and so on. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen on the big media wall or elsewhere, you know, pitches for an AT&T wireless plan or anything like that.
So, yes, this was definitely, since day one, this was not meant to be an advertisement platform. And, you know, it kind of gives you, it's so funny to hear, but I like to walk over there kind of incognito, and people don't know what role I had in, you know, planning and leading this place to success. But I like to hear people say, oh, this is Times Square, but I actually can sit in and enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not full with advertisement, and I'll let Justin speak a little bit more about the strategy behind content, but definitely was not meant to monetize the plaza like that. On the contrary, it was meant to elevate art and elevate ambience setting.
Yeah. I don't want to go behind the scenes, but I just wanted to ask, you may not be able to tell me, but I'm curious because I've seen other projects that have started as art projects and then advertising finds its way into it somehow or other. Was that a debate, or has AT&T said right from the brief that no, this has to be an experience?
Yeah, they've taken a pretty hard line from the get-go of, you know, maintaining kind of an advertising-free space. Now, the caveat there obviously is, you know, we're talking about the largest media company in the world, so. You know, we do have to acknowledge the fact that AT&T is showing, and it, you know, there's content that is, you know, running on the media wall that is promoting AT&T, you know, properties, movies, right. Shows, etc. What I would say though is the way that has come together and the intent with that is purely from an entertainment standpoint, right? So these are, you know, big motion pictures and shows that people are, you know, super interested in, excited about, etc. So, you know, there are certainly moments of that, but to your earlier point, there is no, you know, advertising, so to speak, sales advertising.
Yeah, it's not saying
products or services,
10 gig family plan or anything.
Yeah, and then there's a really healthy mix, quite honestly, of just beautiful artistic content. You know, you mentioned Moment Factory. Moment Factory has been an incredible, you know, part of the team in many ways, but we've got, you know, 15 or more, you know, artists and studios and agencies that have contributed on the content front. And, you know, we've worked really closely all along with the creative director on the Discovery District on the AT&T side. His name is Roger Ferris. And he's always had a really strong vision, as have really the whole AT&T executive team, on what their vision around content was. You know, and we've helped to thread together a strategy that's really guided that. It's guided who we've worked with. It's guided the type of content. You know, we've really defined, the Gensler team has defined, you know, the cadence of that content, the programming and run of show. You know, it is 24/7. So there's been a lot of thought put into what's the vibe and what's the energy level at 9 a.m. on a Monday compared to, you know, 6 or 8 p.m. on a Friday compared to maybe 3 p.m. on a Sunday. And what you notice if you spend a lot of time in the district is that the energy really changes and morphs over time. And even, you know, thinking through the night hours and wanting to be respectful of the fact that this is a district in the middle of a city, there's hotels and there's condos and stuff. So, you know, we've got this beautiful, you know, content that runs through the evening where we take the brightness and the output of that media wall, really tone it down, you know, and put the district in sleep mode, so to speak. And so we've just been really thoughtful about that. And AT&T has been amazing in really investing in the content and putting an emphasis on creativity and art and finding that balance between, you know, the entertainment type content and then just beautiful, you know, beautiful works of art. You know, Moment Factory, Rafik Anadol, Silas Feta, you know, we've worked with lots of big artists and have all come together to create. I think we've got right now over 36 hours of original content that are running at any given point through the district.
And was part of the plan to, a lot of these things come out of the gate with fantastic content. And then 6 months later, people start looking around going, I guess we should change this. Do you have like a 5-year plan or something?
We do. We do. And the Gensler team continues to engage with AT&T. AT&T also continues to engage, you know, with their own kind of set of artists and contributors. But very much, I mean, we're on a continual content production kind of cadence and schedule. So there's, you know, constantly new content that's being developed and rolled out, tested, you know, revised, et cetera. There's also a lot of feedback that's being gleaned from content that's already rolled out. So it's been important to AT&T to really keep an eye on, you know, what do people think about it? Do people love this? Do they hate it? You know, is it annoying? Is it too bright? Is it too, you know, is it too fast? So I think they're doing a great job of kind of collecting that feedback, using that data to then inform what new content gets produced going forward.
And well, the question begs, what are you hearing?
I mean, so far it's been great, honestly.
If you kind of surf the social media and just kind of look up Discover District, you'll just see, I think, you know, this is one where we're really enjoying people's reaction to the district. But I will say something, you know, when we've designed these digital platforms, we've designed them with the concept, what, you know, Roger Ferris, the creative director at AT&T, would call maximum canvas of flexibility. And the idea is you can, you know, you can dial in or dial up the media content as much as you want. For example, I'll give an example. The lobby has a ceiling that what we call the veil, because we veiled in the ceiling. And it's a layering of kind of a polyethylene white membrane that is backed by a very tightly knit RGB grid that has probably over a million pixels.
So how like many a pixels diffusion layer.
Or a diffusion layer, right. It's a very nice system. And it could be just a regularly white backlit ceiling that all of a sudden can transform into, I don't know, whales that are swimming in the ocean or whatever it is. So this really, the idea of very seamlessly integrating the media as architecture and not being an application on a surface really helps with that longevity and that, you know, being able to activate or not whenever you want.
Yeah, I think that's the difference between some of the things that I've seen where, you know, a company puts in a huge LED video wall and maybe a couple other things, but they're just things. There's no continuity and no real sort of thought around the whole experience. It's just, look at this giant thing we put in.
Right, right.
Yeah, the veil is a great example of, you know, media architecture at its core. Even the media wall, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that we wanted to do was get creative. You know, the media wall is so large, it's so prominent in the plaza. It's easy for that to really become an anchor and command all of your attention. And there's certainly certain times during the day or the week in which we do that very intentionally. But what we've also done is, you know, worked hard to create and essentially model and render the exact facade of the building that media wall is applied to. So there are certain times in which that media wall goes into facade mode.
Okay.
And it's shockingly accurate. And people can walk through the plaza and really not have any idea that there's a 8-story tall you know, media wall staring right at them. So there's been some thought put into that as well, and just finding ways to tone down the digital when we want, you know, maybe other platforms or other spaces to command, you know, more of the attention.
Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, when we were, like Justin was saying, before we start just drawing concepts for the plaza, we drive around, study the site from a contextual standpoint. And every time we drove down that Acker Street, we saw that facade, and it's a natural terminus. And we are very lucky that that is an equipment building, because otherwise it would have been a hard, you know, I wouldn't even have suggested to block all that much facade.
Right.
If those were
somebody's office.
So we were kind of lucky that this is an equipment building.
People ask that. They're like, man, you know, this media wall is great, but, you know, it really sucks for everyone that's working in that building, and, you know, they've lost any kind of view. So luckily, like Dana said, there's no one, you know, where those windows are that we've covered up. It's all equipment, you know, technical equipment and things like that. So, you know, we haven't prevented anyone's, you know, view into the plaza or, you know, natural light into their workspace, et cetera. So, yeah, got really lucky with that being a capability that we had.
What's involved in the day-to-day management of all this, all the lighting, the synchronized displays, everything else? Is there like a AT&T team, or is Gensler doing that? How does all that work?
Yeah, so really through the project and through the completion of the project, Gensler was really heavily involved in working with AT&T on all the things I mentioned before, the content strategy, cadence, programming, et cetera, a lot of the operations. And so as we transitioned, you know, everything was installed, it was done, commissioned, ready to roll. We started to work close with AT&T to help them to build their own operations team. And so they actually now have a dedicated team who is, you know, at the helm of the ship and, you know, operating the content management system, operating all the platforms, you know, doing things like maintenance and support, all of that. So yeah, dedicated staff now, they're fully kind of running on their own. And our involvement at this point, and as we move forward, is, as I was mentioning before, continuing to help them to ideate concept and produce new content.
The big idea.
Yep.
Keep the big idea going. How many people do they have working on this full time?
There's a team of 5 to 10.
Wow.
That kind of fluctuate. Everyone kind of having some different roles, some dedicated purely on, you know, tech, some dedicated purely on CMS, some dedicated more on the creative side. So yeah, nice, healthy team.
And yeah. I don't know that we know the extent of property management either, because obviously this is a big district to take care of.
Oh, for sure. You've got
that.
Loss prevention, yeah. Security, you know, yeah. Events. There's all kinds of teams that are really tapped into what's going on in the district on any given day. But from a technology and kind of creative standpoint, yeah, definitely a dedicated team focused on it.
And what's been the response from, you know, the mayor and the people who run Dallas?
You know, in Dallas, we have, in downtown Dallas, we have an organization called Downtown Dallas Inc. that really started a few years ago and came in with initiatives to bring life back and, you know, entice people to live in downtown and enjoy downtown and open businesses in downtown. I guess the reaction of this organization is pretty much consistent with businesses around downtown. I don't know that I heard directly from the mayor, but we've heard very positive reactions from neighboring businesses and Downtown Dallas Inc. and neighboring hotels. As a matter of fact, we've seen businesses started to open around the district and benefiting from the presence of the district and driving, you know, more business down there. So all but positive so far.
Oh, you think about, there's two major hotels right across the street and who half of their rooms look onto this beautiful plaza. And so without going into detail on that, you can just imagine, you know, the more kind of premium view and amenity that is now being offered to those guests of the hotel. So, you know, I've actually stayed in both hotels and have talked to some of the staff there, and they go on and on about it and what their guests are saying and how positive it is.
And let me say that throughout the process of design and of envisioning this, it was a very rigorous approval process from neighboring communities and from the city. We had to go through many, many hearings and just kind of getting community consent on what's being planned. So this was a very kind of inclusive process.
All right. That was super interesting. One of these days I'll be able to travel again and come down and have a look at it.
We can't wait to have you there.
Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks for having us.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.